In this next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with analysis of the involvement of some elements of the intelligence community with the drug traffic. And once again, we're going to be accessing information from the newsletter From the Wilderness, a very fine newsletter put out by Mike Rupert, a former LAPD narcotics detective, who, while working in law enforcement, came across concrete evidence of complicity of elements of the intelligence community in the drug traffic. And like other law enforcement and national security veterans who've come across this over the years, he has come forward, like some former law enforcement and national security veterans who've come across this, he has come forward to attempt to do what he could to expose and correct this defect. Mike Rupert's From the Wilderness can be reached at 14358 Magnolia Boulevard, Suite 313, Sherman Oaks, California, 91423. That address again, 14358 Magnolia Boulevard, Suite 313, Sherman Oaks, California, 91423. The phone and fax numbers, both in the 818 area code phone, 788-8791. That's 788-8791. Fax, 981-2847. Mike has a fine website that I strongly recommend you access. His website is at www.copvcia.com. That middle word is one word. That's www.copvcia.com. Email mrupert, M-U-M-R-U-P-P-E-R-T, at copvcia.com. Again, M-R-U-P-P-E-R-T, at copvcia.com. What we're going to do next is to take a look at another excerpt from the April 25th, 1998 installment of From the Wilderness. In another article from that very same issue, namely the April 25th, 1998 issue, we took a look at the case of Jim Tyree, an Army Special Forces veteran who maintains that he was involved in Operation Watchtower. That, according to Jim Tyree, was an operation in which he was placing electronic beacons to guide aircraft into Panama, aircraft that, according to Jim Tyree, were CIA drug-carrying aircraft. Another national security veteran who has allegations of the complicity of the elements of the intelligence community and military with the drug trade is a fellow named Jim Sabo. Jim Sabo is a Marine colonel who was in charge of air operations at El Toro Marine Air Station, and he was found dead in January of 1991. Now, this is the story of Marine Colonel Jim Sabo, spelled S-A-B-O-W. Reading in the April 25th, 1998 installment of From the Wilderness. In January 1991, Marine Colonel Jim Sabo, Chief of Air Operations at El Toro Marine Air Station, was found dead in his backyard. The archetypal perfect Marine, devout Catholic, family man, and war hero, was alleged by the Naval Investigative Service to have committed suicide over pending disciplinary action regarding his use of Marine aircraft to transport small pieces of furniture and golf clubs. The truth is that Jim Sabo was murdered because he had discovered that CIA and elements of the military had been flying loads of cocaine as large as 2,500 kilos onto bases he controlled, which included Marine Air Corps Station Yuma and the Yuma Proving Grounds. So compelling was the evidence of murder that Connie Chung, as the premiere episode of her 1993 show Eye to Eye, ran the opening segment on Jim's case. In that segment, dramatic forensic evidence showed that Jim Sabo had been knocked unconscious before a shotgun was rammed down his throat. Also in that segment, in one of the most dramatic moments I have ever seen, veteran CIA pilot Tosh Plumley, P-L-U-M-L-E-Y, admitted on the air that he had flown cocaine onto military bases for the agency in C-130s for many years. Of course, no one from the major media played it further, and Connie Chung is, well, history. But thanks to the dogged efforts of Jim's brother David, a retired South Dakota physician, a veteran investigator Gene Wheaton, retired from the Army CID, and attorney Daniel Sheehan, the case is still very much alive and may soon produce some dramatic results in federal court. Last year, Dave Sabo won a dramatic procedural victory against the Marine Corps in the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which kept alive his major lawsuit against the Corps for misconduct and other illegal activities surrounding his brother's death. Among those activities were attempts by the Corps to destroy Sabo's reputation and get him barred from practicing medicine in what were obvious and utterly meritless moves to silence him. 2 weeks ago, Depositions in preparation for an August trial date were taken in San Diego, and in those depositions, Marine and Navy lawyers allowed Szabo to testify on the record for the first time as to details of his brother's murder. When I last talked to Dave, he was extremely optimistic, and he believes we'll see some real fireworks when the case goes to trial. In the future, I will be publishing more detailed reports about the case as they become available. Sheehan, Szabo's attorney, is the same Dan Sheehan who founded the Christic Institute, which broke a great deal of painful ground for us in this struggle. He has kept a decidedly low profile since taking on this case. Gene Wheaton is a true Sherlock Holmes who can rightfully take credit for breaking the stories on CIA, drugs, and MENA, Arkansas. He would be a great witness before the House and has a great deal of personal knowledge and experience with Casey and Company's activities during the Contra years. And he goes on to add, go get 'em. This, again, the article about Colonel Jim Szabo and his strange death from the April 25th, 1998 issue of From the Wilderness. Another national security veteran who overlapped the military, the intelligence community, organized crime, and the drug trade was allegedly a fellow named Albert Vincent Carone, C-A-R-O-N-E. And in the June 21st, 1998 issue of From the Wilderness of Mike Rupert, or by Mike Rupert, there is an article about Albert Vincent Carone and his very, very strange career in law enforcement, intelligence, organized crime, perhaps, and who knows what else. The allegations about Albert Vincent Carone are detailed by Mike Rupert as follows in an article entitled Albert Vincent Carone, NYPD, CIA, Mafia? A deepening paper trail says yes to all three for Oliver North's bill payer. And again, the allegations about Albert Vincent Carone are set forth as follows. Mike Rupert writes, doesn't it seem strange that an investigative summary I wrote in 1994 is now the official military record of a man who died in 1990 and who the Army says is still on active duty? With more than 50 pages of hard documentation, I was able to reconstruct the life and times of a CIA operative who was undercover at NYPD for 20 years, whose brother did LSD research for the CIA, and who, when his daughter got married, had separate reception rooms for the Mafia and NYPD and CIA. Among the Mafia guests at the wedding were Santo Traficante and Paulie Castellano. According to several members of Carone's family, the names North, Secord, Bush, Casey, Abrams, and many other familiar names were household words before Carone died of, quote, chemical toxicity of unknown etiology, unquote, in 1990. Is there documentation to support this? Question mark, Mike asks. And continuing, absolutely. Among other things, Carone's personal phone book lists the home addresses and telephone numbers of CIA Director William Casey and Gambino crime boss Paulie Castellano on the same page. I have held it in my hands. And proceeding, increasing evidence, some recently obtained from Europe, confirms that Carone traveled about the world in conjunction with his partner, James Robert Strauss, dispersing drug profits to pay for all of the covert operations being simultaneously run by Ollie North and George Bush. Travel documents in my possession, and which are a part of my official Carone report, show that, sometimes as often as every other day, Strauss, who was a local insurance broker in New Mexico, made trips to London, Hong Kong, Jeddah, Kuala Lumpur, Jakarta, New Orleans, the Bahamas, Daran, Lisbon, Paris, Sydney, Durban, Johannesburg, and many other cities. In the last year, I have obtained statements from insurance executives who worked with them and then fired Strauss because of his ongoing involvement with drugs and unexplained absences. Carone, who had been a CIA bagman and connected with the French Connection and Prince of the City cases, would routinely leave duties as an NYPD detective in the 1970s, don the uniform of an Army major, and hop military flights all over the world. After retiring and moving to New Mexico in 1980, he continued these efforts at a frenzied pace, laundering and dispersing CIA's cocaine profits all over the world by his own words, quote, at the direction of Oliver North, unquote, who he said used the alias John Caffey. Some of Carone's other personal records show a close relationship to almost every board member of the CIA drug bank Nugan Hand, and grow even more detailed on the subject of CIA's longtime money handler Paul Helliwell. Sources in Britain tell me that one of those projects was for the ostensible task of recovering U.S. POWs held in Russia. in early 1997 when Oliver North appeared live on CNN with talk show host Joe Madison, who was doing a terrific job of keeping the drug story hot. Ollie blatantly challenged Madison or anyone to, quote, tell me where the money went, unquote. I was instantly on the call-in line, but could not get through. Maybe next time. It is now a fairly well-documented story that DEA agent Kiki Camarena was murdered while chasing down the CIA-protected drug ring of Miguel Felix Gallardo and Rafael Caro Quintero. Caron returned from Mexico in 1985, at the time Kiki was murdered, and told his family that he had lost his stomach for covert work because a DEA agent had been murdered as a result of his CIA operations. It was shortly thereafter that Caron became ill and started babbling to his family, who were careful to secret key records. What becomes still more interesting about Caron is that immediately after his death, all official records on him disappeared from NYPD, the Army, and even the New Mexico Department of Motor Vehicles. Simply stated, he never existed after World War II. Forget that I have photographs of him in uniform as both a major and a full colonel. Caron was buried in a New Mexico military cemetery with the rank of staff sergeant. His pensions and bank accounts disappeared. His driver's license disappeared, and even his life insurance policies disappeared. When I first met with the family, I advised them that, to my knowledge, there was only one person who could help them. That was none other than the infamous CIA blonde ghost, Ted Shackley, who had been a principal in every CIA covert operations from the Bay of Pigs through Iran-Contra. Always, where CIA has touched drugs, one finds Shackley's footprints. Less than 10 days after Caron's daughter contacted Shackley, his headstone was changed from staff sergeant to full colonel. No monies were returned, but Shackley did quite clearly admit to having known Caron. Now, consider these additional facts. The daughter of Colonel Ed Cutolo of the Cutolo affidavit instantly recognized a photograph of Al Caron as a frequent visitor to her childhood home. Bill Tyree, that's the Army Special Forces veteran I spoke about earlier, states that not only did he know Caron, but he worked with Caron on many CIA missions, and that Caron was, quote, the paymaster, unquote, for those missions. The circles grow closer and closer, because as time will tell, the people who have stolen our government are a very small circle indeed. By the way, that's a point I've made many times. Our national security establishment is diverse. It is by no means monolithic, and there are many fine and honorable men and women within it who would have nothing to do with activities of this type. And the fact that we know as much as we do about some of these types of activities is due to those very same heroic men and women. And we all owed a great debt of gratitude to those individuals, and it is to be hoped that they can prevail. Continuing. Oh, and by this is Mike Rupert writing here. Oh, and by the way, the reason that the Army lists a dead man as still being on active duty is that because as long as they show him as living, all of his records, including my report, which is now his official military history, are exempt from disclosure. Fascinating bit of information. And again, the allegations concerning Bill Tyree and Operation Watchtower, the allegations concerning Marine Colonel Jim Sabo, and the allegations concerning Albert Caron, all from the Wilderness newsletter of Mike Rupert, himself a former LAPD narcotics officer who was recruited by CIA by his own account. And again, let me stress that I have no information personally implicate any of these individuals in any types of criminal activity. That's simply by way of underscoring my own position on this. It's not to cast aspersions on Mike Rupert or any of the people who have performed this heroic work in bringing these connections to light, but I personally, nor the any of the radio stations that I work on, I do not personally, nor do any of the stations that I work on, have any information incriminating any of these individuals. Continuing then with our discussion, turning once again to the From the Wilderness newsletter of Mike Rupert. This is the issue of April 25th of 1998. As investigations into the intelligence community and the drug trade continue, there is a new chair of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence named J. Porter Goss, last name G-O-S-S, and apparently this individual is no stranger to the intelligence community. In an article entitled Know Your Chairman, Mike Rupert writes, J. Porter Goss, G-O-S-S, chair of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, is the man who will decide the when, where, and how of the next round of hearings on CIA and drugs. J. Porter Goss is also retired from CIA. His bio says that he worked in clandestine operations from the early 60s to the 70s in Florida. Gee, that means he worked with Ted Shackley, Ed Lansdale, Tom Clines, George Bush, Felix Rodriguez, and all of the prime movers who have orchestrated CIA drug dealing for decades, not only during Contra, but much earlier in Pakistan, Laos, and the Middle East. In spite of that, the March 16th surprise hearing, which so resoundingly backfired, makes me believe that Goss, as long as there's a camera and a few aware people present, will have to maintain a semblance of integrity. I have to agree with Mike Levine that it did look like he was snickering a little when Maxine Waters was testifying. Can you say conflict of interest? Okay, I've been a true skeptic about Congress, and with good reason. I have been promised 4 times that I would testify. But I truly believe that making the phone ring and sending a letter would truly be money well spent. Now, let HPSCI know that we are aware of what happened on March 16th, and we're still watching. A couple of names and addresses that Mike Rupert recommends: Peter Goss, GOSS Chairman, House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, H-405, U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C., 20515, phone 202-225-7690. Once again, Porter Goss, GOSS, Chairman, House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, H-405, U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C., 20515, phone 202-225-7690. And the ranking member of that committee is Norman Dix, D-I-C-K-S, 2467 Rayburn Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515, phone 202-225-5916. Again, Norman Dix, D-I-C-K-S, 2467 Rayburn Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. Phone is 202-225-5916. And also in the Mike Rupert newsletter from the Wilderness, there's a discussion of a going to ground or of a disappearance of a key CIA operative who had been an informant on many of these activities. And we're going to talk about that right now. This fellow's name was Chip Tatum. Turning once again to the April 25th, 1998 issue of From the Wilderness, we read the following, entitled Chip Tatum Disappears. Doas G. Chip Tatum, former heavyweight CIA operative from the Contra era, publisher of popular web pages, and the widely circulated Tatum Chronicles, has vanished. As I reported in the first issue of this newsletter, Chip had recently told me that he had previously been offered a deal by Langley to go away. Part of that deal, according to Chip, included the public fall of Oliver North, for whom Tatum bears no strong love. Part of Tatum's dislike of Ollie stems from North's alleged direct involvement in ordering wet operations against American citizens. As of the last time I talked to Chip in early March, he told me that he had gotten his deal and that Ollie was going down. If that's the case, then his departure may be a part of the quid pro quo Chip said he had secured to go quietly. Among other things Chip had put out on the web was a scanned image of a letter written to him by George Bush. That and other documentation threatened serious harm to the shadow government if the material penetrated the collective consciousness of the general public. Chip's documents, official reports, and flight plans went far to corroborate the MENA connection and described Tatum's direct contacts with then-Governor Bill Clinton and Barry Seal in the era. These documents have been widely circulated in the African-American community since the Gary Webb stories appeared. But other developments have raised questions. Specifically, Chip had recently done a series of talk shows with Palm Beach talk show host Jim Alsis, A-L-S-I-S, which resulted in decidedly overt attempts to intimidate Alsis off the air. They worked. Almost immediately thereafter, Tatum's internet service provider company and his web pages disappeared. His phones were cut off. My good friend Bob Fletcher, a true veteran in the fight against CIA and drugs, reported to me that he had heard that Chip had gone to ground. I've known Chip for about 2 years, and I can say that he has never given me a piece of bad information. He has a wry sense of humor, and he is a true hardcore operative with great survival skills. If I hear anything, I'll let you know. His last words to me were, quote, hammer now like you've never hammered before, unquote. And that's, again, from the Wilderness Newsletter by Mike Rupert, an individual we're going to be visiting with in just a second. And we are now joined by Mike Rupert, the editor of From the Wilderness. Mike, welcome to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay, let me pot you up just a little bit higher. Now, as I speak on the evening of September 6th, 1998, when we're recording this, there has just been a lawsuit filed in Massachusetts in connection with Bill Tyree's case. Although our listeners have just heard a little about Bill Tyree, could you briefly refresh us as to who he is and some of his connections and what the lawsuit is about?
Bill Tyree, Dave, is a former U.S. Army Green Beret Special Forces troop who was on a series of missions known as the Watchtower missions in 75 and 76, and that year is going to be telling because that's the year during which George Bush was the director of Central Intelligence. In those missions, Tyree and other members of a special action team were ordered into Colombia under the command of Special Forces colonels operating out of Panama, and they were ordered to plant radio beacons so that cocaine flights run by CIA's Ed Wilson and Tom Clines could fly below radar and land at Albrook Field in Panama. There were 30 to 40 such missions. Tyree was present when those planes arrived, and he witnessed the cocaine being offloaded in the presence of Ed Wilson and Tom Clines, and also Manuel Noriega, as well as an Israeli Mossad agent named Michael Harari, who turns up heavily throughout Iran-Contra. Tyree later transferred to Fort Devens, and became a member of 10th Special Forces Group Airborne, which was then at Fort Devens in Massachusetts, and was engaged in 78-79 in massive domestic surveillance and blackmail operations to protect secrets connected to CIA drug dealing, which led back directly to a former deputy director, Ted Shackley, and Maya Bettenoir, and George Bush.
Now, this was Operation Orwell?
These were dubbed the Orwell missions.
And these were to cover, basically, Operation Watchtower.
That's correct. There was a lot of illegal activity taking place. We're talking direct out-and-out blackmail of public officials who had skeletons. One in particular, John Droney, was a homosexual. There's a letter, as a matter of fact, from Droney to the Special Forces commander acknowledging to the blackmail terms over his homosexuality, which is part of the case we're going to get to. Bill Tyree was kind of losing his stomach. The missions were directed against Americans. They were on American soil. They were patently illegal. There was a lot of really nasty stuff going on. His wife, Elaine, had been keeping a diary and had tried to become an informant for Army CID at Fort Devens. And so Tyree was becoming, and especially his wife, was becoming a threat. So Elaine Tyree was murdered in early 1979. And Bill was arrested and framed for the murder of his own wife. He has been serving a life sentence in Walpole State Prison in Massachusetts for some 20 years now. And he's patently innocent. There is a mountain of proof that he was not at the crime scene to show exactly who the real killer was. There are documents and affidavits which have been accumulating now over 20 years, which just absolutely prove that there's an innocent man in jail, much like in the case of Geronimo Pratt.
Now, there has been a lawsuit filed in connection with his case as of just a couple of days ago.
Yes. Now, some of the details are sketchy. Now, I'm giving you this information. You have to understand, both as the publisher of the newsletter who's going to be writing the story, but I'm also an investigator involved with the case, and an affidavit prepared by me is a substantial part of the suit that was filed in U.S. District Court in Massachusetts on September 4th, which is just 2 days ago. The suit is asking for $62,021,000, which is kind of funny, in damages. The defendants are George Herbert Walker Bush, the Central Intelligence Agency et al., Governor Paul Cellucci of Massachusetts, Massachusetts State Attorney General Scott Harshbarger, and a few other sundry characters. The suit is alleging or is claiming that George Bush directly and the CIA were complicit in the murder of Elaine Tyree and the retrieval and theft of her diaries, which contained a lot of damaging information. Harshbarger and Cellucci are covered in that. There are previous criminal cases in Massachusetts against the police who were involved in the case, who seized Tyree's personal property and never returned it to him, even after conviction. And some of this property would tend to prove that he was innocent. So we have criminal judgments against police officers and prosecutors in Middlesex County in Massachusetts, and now we have a host of affidavits and material being brought together in this suit, which is going to start rocking Washington sometime next week.
And the respondents in the suit include George Bush. That's senior, right?
George Herbert Walker Bush, yes.
All righty. And, of course, his son, George Jr., currently the governor of Texas, is being touted as the Republican front runner in the year 2000. And the another of the defendants is none other than the CIA itself.
That's correct.
An ambitious lawsuit, and one... can only pray to God for the safety of the people involved in it.
Well, I need to, and thank you for that, because I guess I'm one of those. I don't guess, I know.
You all will not be given medals for doing this.
Well, no, but we're probably going to get a few chuckles along the way.
Oh.
This lawsuit has been in the preparatory stages now for many months. It is extremely solid from a legal standpoint. I'm going to be publishing a lot more details as they become available when I send my next newsletter out, which will be the 19th of September. Some of the stuff I need to fall back and refer to Bill Tyree's attorney, Ray Coleman, that's K-O-H-L-M-A-N, who's in Attleboro, Massachusetts. You're going to see a lot of affidavits turning up in this case from people who are extremely well-known in the CIA drug controversy as being good guys. And a lot of hard documented evidence. And I asked Ray Coleman to get us a direct quote from my newsletter. I asked him and I said, will you be able to show in this lawsuit a direct, incontrovertible link to George Herbert Walker Bush other than speculation or his relationship as DCI? The answer was, we will.
Okay, now just a couple of things here, Mike. First of all, I want to stress simply for legal purposes that neither myself nor any of the radio stations that will carry this broadcast has any information implicating any of the people named in the program directly in criminal activity. That's just pro forma.
Right.
Having said that, Mike, your newsletter and some of the very stimulating information in it can be obtained from?
You can write to me at annual subscription. It's a monthly newsletter. Annual subscription is $25.
Can't mention prices on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. I take that back.
No sweat.
I didn't say it.
Yep.
Post Office Box 6061-350, Sherman Oaks, California, 91413.
Box 6060, because I'd been given the street address on Magnolia Boulevard.
Yeah, we just changed that.
Okay, so it's P.O. Box 6061.
Right, -350.
-350, and that's in Sherman Oaks, 91423?
91413.
91413.
Okay. And I apologize, I just made those changes today.
Okay, P.O. Box 6061-350, Sherman Oaks, 91413, and I'll give the rest here in the interest of time. Website, www.copvcia.com. www.copvcia.com. The email address, mrupert, M-R-U-P-P-E-R-T, at copvcia.com. That's M-R-U-P-P-E-R-T, at copvcia.com. And the phone and fax numbers, both in the 818 area code, 788-8791 is the phone, 788-8791. And the fax number is 981-2847. Fax 981-2847. Our guest has been Mike Rupert, the editor of From the Wilderness, and a person who, in my estimation, is a true American hero, and those are not words that I say lightly. Mike, thanks for your work, and thanks for appearing on our program.
David, thank you so very much.
For Mike Rupert, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.